Well, again, congrats to the Arizona Coyotes winning their qualifying round against the Nashville Predators. We wait to see who they play in the opening round of the NHL playoffs. Luke Lipinski points out Darcy Kuemper has made 152 saves in this series in the four games.
Yeah, good matchup for them. Nashville is not a strong defensive team. They have a great offense, and that's where you need Kuemper. But they're not strong in net, and they're not strong defensively. The defenders are good offensive players like Roman Josi. But this next matchup, no matter who it is, will be much more difficult if they're either going to take on Vegas or Colorado.
All right, things not going well for the Suns today, despite the fact that they're 4-0 so far in the bubble and continue to be the talk of the bubble. And we'll tell you all the latest praise to be heaped on them in just a moment. The Grizzlies are well on their way to a victory over Oklahoma City. 97-78 is the score in that game with just under 10 minutes to go in the fourth quarter. The second and third quarters have just been the Memphis Grizzlies have scored 70 points combined in the second and the third quarter.
They've
turned it on big time.
Since the Suns won yesterday, none of the news has gone their way.
You're right.
Right, since the game ended, and a lot of people got very jacked up because they were 4-0, and they just beat the Pacers. Three games have gone against them.
Trailblazers beat the Nuggets last night.
Right.
The Jazz beat the
Spurs.
Oh, the Spurs beat the Jazz
today.
Thank you. Spurs beat the Jazz today, and now this outcome.
So three outcomes did not go their way.
Yeah, the Suns need some help from the Memphis Grizzlies. Basically, with this win, if the Suns are going to pass the Memphis Grizzlies,
they
have to go 4-0.
Yeah, they got to go 4-0.
And basically, with Portland's win last night, if the Suns are going to pass Portland, the Suns have to go 4-0. So if the Suns are going to do this, it would appear.
Is there any way to pass Portland going 3-1?
They would have to go 1-3 in their final. Portland would have to go 1-3.
Don't they have the tiebreaker over Portland?
It's the win percentage thing because they're going to play an uneven number of games.
Right, and they have a higher win percentage, don't they?
The Suns right now? No, they don't.
Portland. If they end up tied.
They won't end up tied.
They can't end up tied.
They will play a different number of games. So the only way the Suns could
go 3-1.
To go 3-1 is if Portland goes 1-3 in their final four games. It's the only way they could pass Portland for that spot.
Memphis will have three games left here. They have to go 0-3. And then the Suns, let me see if I can get this right. If Memphis goes 0-3, what do the Suns have to do?
The Suns have to go 4-0.
If this Memphis goes 0-3.
If Memphis, with the win today.
Okay.
With the win today.
Yeah.
If Memphis loses every single game from here on out, the Suns would have to go 4-0 to pass them. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. And if the Blazers go 2-2, the Suns would have to go 4-0 to pass them. If the Blazers go 1-3, then the Suns have a little bit of wiggle room. They could lose a game and still pass them. That's if Portland goes 1-3. They're up against it. They're not
Portland's playing great right now.
Yeah.
They are playing, and they are going to be such a dangerous team in the playoffs.
Now, all that being said, all right, yes, the luck has turned against them a little bit with some of these results in the bubble. The Suns continue to be the talk of the bubble. And Monty Williams yesterday talked about this big stage and how it's impacting Devin Booker right now.
I think anytime you can play on this stage and get used to it, it's a bonus. But I don't think it changes his mentality. You know, this is how that young man plays all the time, and everybody's just getting a chance to see it now. So I think it's like an announcement to the rest of the world who wasn't paying attention to him, even though I thought more people were, especially around the league. But I think it's a testament to the work that he puts into his game.
Zach Lowe of ESPN wrote a story today, 10 things I like, 10 things I hate so far from the bubble.
10 things I like about you?
Exactly. both Devin Booker and Mikal Bridges made his write-up. Of Devin Booker, he wrote this. He might be Exhibit A in why the NBA should have included seeding games in awards balloting. He was a borderline all-NBA candidate, and he would have leapfrogged onto more ballots had these games counted in that.
At some point, listen, this is what I fully expect. At some point, we are going to turn our attention away from the odds of them making the playoffs to what did they accomplish in the bubble. We are. Because it's the Grizzlies are up by 18 points late, midway through the fourth. They're going to win. And Portland's winning. And it's just, they're not going to make it. It's going to be – I just don't see how they're going to make it. They're really up against it. But we will turn our attention to, okay, they didn't make it in, but what did they accomplish? What does this do for next season? Mm-hmm. What does this do for the players on the roster? Does James Jones now try to keep this roster intact with a few moves? I told you the other day before they went on this win streak, I think they're going to keep Kelly Oubre now. I don't feel like they are forced to trade him. I do not. There was a time I thought an Oubre for Aaron Gordon trade could happen, and I'm not so sure about that now. I think that they could keep Dario Saric if he's willing to take a lesser amount of money as a bench guy. So I do think there are some things that have changed because of the bubble. But we will turn our attention to what did they accomplish?
Yeah.
What does this mean for Book? And what does this mean for next year? Because eventually that's what this is going to be about. What did the Suns do to change people's expectations and hopes for next season? And I think that answer is going to be a lot.
I think so, too. And I think that conversation, unfortunately, we're probably going to be having it maybe sooner than we expect based off of how things are going in the bubble. But I don't – look, their odds were all so tough to begin with this year. I think you're absolutely right. The change in the tone of conversation comes in next year and what this changes our expectations. And frankly, how the league – views Devin Booker now moving forward. I mean, until he hit that shot against the LA Clippers, there were a lot of people around the league who thought that Devin Booker was just an empty stat guy who couldn't lead his team to anything, any kind of measurable wins. And now that he's got significantly better pieces around him, it's becoming obvious to everybody else, I think what you and I and others here in Phoenix had suspected long ago, that Devin Booker is capable of leading the team. He just needed to have the right pieces around him to do it, and he's demonstrated. And that to me is the biggest evolution of the Suns in the bubble is kind of proven to the rest of the league.
Sure.
Booker is more than just an empty stats guy, people.
You know, the biggest argument I get in over with people is, you know, I think that Devin Booker is a great player. I'm a big fan of his. I mean, I always have been. I mean, I am, you know, I'm not a Booker apologist, but there are some people out there that get on me because I don't call him a superstar. I don't think that Booker's a superstar. But this is, listen, everybody has their own opinions, right? I reserve the superstar status for about 10 to 12 players in this league, and that's it. Okay? 10 to 12 players. I don't have 30 superstars in the league. I don't say that every team has a superstar. I think there's about 10 or 12 guys that are superstar elite players. I think Devin Booker's a great player. A great player. Not a good player. A great player. So I think he's in that next tier that's under superstar. But I get into arguments with people on that because they're like, oh, you said he wasn't a superstar. Yeah, I still don't think he's a superstar. He hasn't won a playoff game
yet. On behalf of those people, what does he have to do to graduate to the level of superstar?
He's got to take his team to levels that they haven't been at in a long time.
Okay, so
you have to win playoff games.
If they make the playoffs,
you have to
next
win
year?
Series. No, you have to win that. You got to do more than that.
Okay, I'm kind of challenging you a little bit. I'm just curious.
What do you think he's a superstar?
No, I don't. But I think he's closer to being a superstar than you do because I don't. To me, there are more than 12 superstars in the league. I hit zoom out. I put more guys on that list. I don't think he's there yet. I think he's closer than
man.
You.
I don't want to get to the point where I'm calling every really great player a superstar because that's got to be reserved for the best of the best. That's got to be reserved for LeBron and Kawhi and Giannis and those type of players. I just think that I think when you've got all these years and you've only won 20 something games again. I mean, there's no knock. I'm a big fan. I think he's a great player, an all-star, but not every all-star is a superstar.
Yeah.
Could he get there? Sure, he's 23 years old. Of course, he could get there eventually.
Okay, and just to clarify, I'm not talking about letting 30 guys into the superstar club. You know, you say 12. I say it's closer to like 18 to 20 superstars in this league. It's not like I got 40 guys on my list or anything. The love for Book, like I say, it continues to come in. ESPN ran a poll on Twitter today that as of this morning had about 17,000 votes. Has Devin Booker been the best player in the bubble so far? 52% had said yes, he was. Kevin O'Connor from The Ringer, Devin Booker is incredible. After three straight seasons of him being one of the most talented scorers in the NBA, it's great to see him finally getting respected now that he has a supporting cast that complements and enhances him. Such a dynamic all-around scorer, my goodness. And as I mentioned, Zach Lowe thinks that if they were counting these games in the final tally, Devin Booker might end up making like an all-NBA third team based off of what he's doing. He won't, obviously, because they're not using these games to count towards that, but that he could if they were.
He's getting
using
a lot
games.
Of national recognition. And if he was scoring a lot of points and they weren't winning, he wouldn't be. So it goes hand in hand. He's getting the recognition because he's playing great, but also because they're winning.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. That has everything to do with it. Coming up, a new trend is starting to develop inside the NBA's bubble in Orlando. It's affecting the Suns in both positive and negative ways. We'll talk about it coming up on the Burns and Gambo Show. The phrase, and I know all basketball fans by now probably know it, but the phrase is known as load management. And it was the scourge of the league there for a couple of years, right? Guys, LeBron's taking a rest game. Kawhi's taking a rest game.
Well, those back-to-backs on national TV, and the NBA was like, people are buying tickets and they're tuning in for this national television game, and guess what? LeBron's not playing.
Right.
And Curry's not playing. And these guys are sitting guys out because it was a back-to-back where they got three games in four nights. And so the league tried to do something to fix that by, you know, stretching out that schedule a little bit more so there weren't as many back-to-backs and there weren't as many three games in four night type of things. So, but that was a big issue in the NBA for a long time, players opting out of games that were on national television.
Yep, and now that we're in the bubble, we're starting to see load management as we know it, and it's helping and it's hurting the Suns at the same time. Last night, it hurt the Phoenix Suns. The Denver Nuggets basically kind of threw the white flag on that game. That they were down in the third quarter. Jokic went out. He didn't come back in. I think they took him out with about 4.5 minutes to go in the third. There were a lot of their key guys that didn't see any real significant minutes. A lot of their bench players in Portland went on to win the game. That hurt the Suns. Today, the Jazz, man, they sat everybody
Gobert,
in that game.
Mitchell, they sat like five players, I think.
Yep.
They sat everybody. So they had no ability to compete. And this is the problem you're going to get into, because not everybody's going to take these eight games seriously. Some of these teams are going to take the first few games seriously. All right, let's get back into shape. Let's get some game. But now, I don't want anybody getting hurt for the playoffs. I'm going to rest guys and... Man, what the Jazz did, I mean, that was, you talk about waving the white flag. They had nobody. I mean, they had five guys. I think it was five. I'm going to look. I think I put the number down here. But yeah, so they Bogdan Bogdanovich was out. Mike Conley, Rudy Gobert, Donovan Mitchell, Royce Neal, Nigel Williams-Goss.
Yeah.
6 players, including Conley, Gobert, Mitchell, and Bogdanovich. They're not going to win.
Bogdanovich was out already.
He's already out.
He's already out. But the main ones were Conley, Gobert, Mitchell, O'Neal, and Williams-Goss. Yeah, I mean, those guys, their starters were Emmanuel Mudiay, Mai Oni, Joe Ingles, Ed Davis. It giveth and it taketh away for the Phoenix Suns.
Get a break tomorrow.
For the Suns.
The Suns will get a break tomorrow.
It works in their benefit because Jimmy Butler has already been ruled out of the game for the Miami Heat. And Goran Dragic might follow him on being out that game. So to try to sit there, and I guess my overriding point in all this, is to try to sit there and look at the schedules of these teams the Suns need to lose. And to try to correctly predict which of these games are tough and which of these games are wins and losses, it makes it very difficult to project when you're looking ahead to matchups against the Bucks or the Celtics,
Toronto,
or the Heat, or Toronto. Because,
Mavs.
And to be fair, if the roles were reversed and the shoe was on the other foot and the Suns had nothing to play for, wouldn't we want them to give Devin Booker a little bit of a rest before the playoffs start?
Sure.
Wouldn't we want them to give Mikal Bridges a little bit of a blow, Ayton a little bit of a blow? I mean, LeBron James, for example. Here's Mark Spears from yesterday. The Lakers, in his opinion, should sit players right now.
The Lakers have nothing to prove. They've already got the number one seed. If I'm them, I'm trying to get a private trip to Disney World right now. Maybe going to African Safari. What do they have to play for other to get their rhythm? Their coach isn't expected to rest guys, but at this point, other than getting their rhythm, when you see what happened to Ben Simmons, the Lakers have bigger fish to fry.
It just sucks. Because you were probably watching that Portland Trailblazers-Denver Nuggets game the way I was, too.
Yes.
And when it was very obvious that Denver said, you know what, we played last night. We're good. We don't really need this one. We're okay. And they backed off. You could just feel the momentum from the win by the Suns earlier in the day against Indiana kind of fade a little bit because you needed Portland to lose that game in the worst kind of way.
Kendrick Nunn is also going to be out for the Heat. So Jimmy Butler's not playing. Kendrick Nunn is not playing. And then possibly, you know, Goran Dragic. So they're without key players. So Butler and Nunn are both expected to miss that game against the Suns. Now, that's good because, you know, hopefully the Suns can get a win. But you also look at it in the way you broke it down earlier. Memphis wins one more game, you can't pass them. Portland wins one more game, you can't pass them. Right? I mean, you can't really, like, somebody's got to lose all their games between them. Well, Portland's got four left. If they went 3-1 and the Suns went 4-0, I'm still confused on that.
Okay. You want to go over it again?
Yeah, I always get confused on Portland. I know Memphis is easy. If Memphis has to not win any of their remaining three games.
And even then, the Suns have to go 4-0 now. Okay.
But if Memphis wins one more game, the Suns can't pass.
Okay, here we go. All right?
Yeah.
Okay, the Blazers. Okay. The Blazers are going to play
four games.
More games than the Suns when it's all said and done. Total. Okay? Not in the bubble, but total. Which means no tiebreakers apply. It's just a straight win percentage. Whoever's got the better winning percentage will advance to the playoffs if it comes down to the Suns versus the Blazers. If the Blazers go 1-3 in their remaining four games, the Suns can pass them if they go 3-1 or 4-0. That's if they go 1-3.
Which is probably very unlikely the way they're playing right now.
If the Blazers win two of their final four games.
Got to go 4-0.
The Suns have to go 4-0 to pass them. Non-negotiable. It's the only way you pass the Portland
Trail Blazers. And if the Blazers go 3-1, you can't pass them.
You cannot catch them.
Okay, gotcha. I got it.
You can't catch them. Whereas Memphis, like you say, it's much simpler. They won today. Memphis beat Oklahoma City.
They win one more game, you can't pass.
If they win one more game, you can't pass Memphis.
Right.
Tough
schedule. They got to play Toronto, Milwaukee, and Boston.
But
are those teams going to play?
That plays back into the conversation we're having now. Who on Milwaukee's going to play on that game? Who on Boston's going to play on that game? Who in Toronto's going to play that game?
With nothing to play for.
We don't know. And so without some sort of – and I was listening to an interview with an NBA insider whose name escapes me. He was on with Bickley and Murata earlier today. He said, look, from a competitive spirit conversation, yeah, I'd love it if all of these teams were playing their guys. And early on, everybody was. I think you and I talked about this at the beginning of the week. Watching the first weekend of the NBA bubble, it was clear. Teams were intent on putting on a show, right? They were going to play their guys. Heavy minutes. National TV audience. Hey, thanks for – sorry we weren't able to give you sports for the last 4 months. Here you go. Here's our main stars playing a bunch of minutes. Once they got that out of their system, we've seen teams back off on guys ever since then because they're looking at the big picture.
Yeah.
They're looking at the play. And so
about establish a little rhythm for three or four games and then start to wind it down a little
exactly.
bit. Exactly. Wind it down, get some rest.
And so I don't know what to predict from Memphis because – all of those three teams you mentioned, yeah, normally I would say, sure, they're going to lose all of them. Are they? I don't know who's going to play for any of those
the
teams.
The hope, in all honesty, to me, the biggest game was this game that we just watched. We need the Suns needed Oklahoma City to win.
Yeah.
Because if Memphis would have lost this game, all the pressure in the world would have been on the Memphis Grizzlies.
Yeah. That and last night's too. Our buddy, Kevin Pelton, he was tweeting you last night. Pelton initially had the Suns as a double-digit odds percentage chance to get into the postseason. Then Portland won, and he backed it down to single digits. That's how much that one game changed the Suns' odds.
Yeah, listen. The most important thing for me is when this is over and they don't get in. The attention has to turn to what they accomplished.
Yes. Yeah.
You'll have this moment of God, that sucks. I thought for a minute there, I thought they were going to get in. But in the end, then it's got to be turned towards what they accomplished in this bubble.
Coming up, it's a record that has stood untouched for nearly 20 years. According to the Cardinals' Chandler Jones, he's in prime position to break that record this year. That's next on the Burns and Gambo Show.
Yeah, that's always a goal of mine, to be honest with you. I don't think that's hard to get. And I feel like if there was a year to do it, this could be the year to do it, honestly, for me. That's a personal goal of mine.
Gotta love Chandler Jones' confidence there. I don't think it's that tough. I can get it. 22.5 sacks, Michael Strahan's record. Sure.
I heard the morning crew talking about that today. Could a guy be more humble in bragging about his ability to – could he be more humble in bragging about something?
That's a great point.
I thought it was. Was it Doug that made that point? Somebody made that point. A Maloney. Somebody made that point. That's a good point.
He's such a so humble
and being braggadocious at the same time.
Yeah, he just sounds so calm and confident and humble, and yet at the same time, yeah, no big deal. So
no,
what?
No biggie.
Yeah, 22.5 sacks. Yeah.
Whoop-de-doo. Is Brett Favre coming back? I can get 5 right there.
Oh, that's solid.
Bring Brett Favre back.
Who's going to fall down for Chandler Jones the way Brett Favre fell for Michael Strahan all those years ago?
Chandler Jones will play in his 30s for the first time this year.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. And Chandler Jones, and look, I wasn't expecting us to have this conversation. I didn't mean it to turn it here. At some point, we're going to have the Chandler Jones – do you extend? When do you extend conversation? Because when he starts getting on the wrong side of 30, you do wonder if the Cardinals will just say, thank you very much, and move on and go in a different direction for as productive as he is.
Depends. Do you have another pass rusher or no?
That's a good question.
I didn't send you the cut, Bernsie, but he was actually asked yesterday if he thinks his contract is a bargain for Arizona, considering all these other pass rushers that are getting new deals.
Oh, that is a bridge that we're going to have to cross when it happens. I still have 2 years left in my contract. I'm happy here. I love it here. But those numbers are definitely are jaw dropping. Those are some really nice numbers to see. But we still got some time to get there.
Signed a 5-year, $82.5 million deal, $15 million signing bonus, 51 of it guaranteed. Average annual salary of 16.5. He's an unrestricted free agent in 2 years. I don't know if there's an opt out or not. I'd have to check. But he's under contract for this year, and then he's under contract for next year. So that's why I say in 2 years left on his deal. I'm reading something out. It says potential out 2020. So maybe there's a potential out on that contract. I'm going to do a little deep dive and see if I can figure that out. But if he plays these next 2 years and then he's 32 years old, That's a risky contract to give a 32-year-old player.
Sure is,
He's been great. I wouldn't mind, give him a 2-year deal at that point. I don't want to give him anything longer.
Yeah.
And we've seen pass rushers play, Dwight Freeney, John Abraham. We've seen pass rushers play well, into their mid-30s, special players. He may be that special player.
Nobody in football has more sacks than Chandler Jones does since he came to the Arizona Cardinals. Over the same time span in the league, nobody has more sacks than Chandler Jones does. And yet he's always been kind of a one-man band when it comes to that, which is why he thinks this might be the year for him to break the sack record.
I mean, I feel like I'm getting closer and closer, and I don't feel older. And I had a pretty decent year last year. I feel even better, actually, with some of this time off. My body got some time to rest. So why not? Why not? Why can't I break the record? So we'll see.
Again, there's some of that humility the morning show was talking about. Yeah, I had a decent year last year. Yeah, yeah. 19 sacks.
Almost won the damn year. I think Shaq Barrett had 19.5.
Yep.
But listen, you got to have confidence in your ability
of
when
course.
You're that good.
Of course.
When you're that great a player, I don't ever have a problem, with guys that are that good. I have the problem with guys who talk the talk but then can't walk the walk.
Mm-hmm.
Major problem with that.
Yeah.
Don't tell me you're good and then you're not. But if you're great and you want to tell me you're great, okay, cool. I mean, it's great. Hey, I'm great. Yep, you are. I got no problem. Say it all day long. Sing it from the mountaintops.
Yeah.
I'm the best. Yep, you are. But for the guys that pretend they're great and they're not, that's a different story.
Jordan Phillips, Devondre Campbell, Isaiah Simmons, Devon Kennard. Those are some of the reasons why he thinks his sack total should be really helped this year.
We have more help on our team. We have a better team. I mean, you see it on paper, but, it's right there out for you. We have a better team, so with more help from the defense and the offense, that should help that total come up for sure.
It's funny, I was just thinking about this too, probably because of how it happened, it being so memorable. But I will admit that Strahan's record of sacks in a single season, NFL records don't typically stand out to me the way baseball records do. For some reason, Strahan's record stands out.
Because of how he got it?
Probably.
Of the idiot that he replaced.
I just know.
Because everybody hated Mark Astino.
I just know. No, it wasn't because of that. I think it was because of how we got it. I didn't need to look up who the all-time single-season sack leader was in NFL history. I know off the top of my head, Michael Strahan, 22.5. Usually that memory for me is reserved more for baseball because it's more of a records-oriented
sport.
But
he broke the record on a fluke. Gastineau should probably still have it.
And that's probably why I remember it, is because the way it happened, the way it went down, if you're a fan of sports, I don't know how you can't remember.
It was a gimme.
It was. It was Strahan, you're my boy. I'm going to go down for you.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm gonna flop.
Yeah, Mark Gastineau was part of the Jets sack exchange. They had him and Joe Klecko were the big players on that defensive line, and they were great. But Gastineau was pretty much hated by his teammates. He was a one-man band. It's just – I mean, he could get to the quarterback, but yeah, he was always upset that that record got broken the way it did.
Speaking of the NFL, the deadline came and went yesterday. It was actually 1 o'clock in the afternoon yesterday. 69 players in total opted out of the NFL. Now, players.
Who was the most prominent player? I'm going to have to take a look at that. I thought you may have known offhand. Dante Hightower?
That's probably. Dante Hightower, I think, to me, was probably the most prominent. Do you have one that stands out?
I'm gonna look at the decision at the players because there was a lot of them. See if one stands out to me.
I'm looking at the list right now.
Devin Funchess, Allen Hurns. No, Miami lost Allen Hurns and Albert Wilson. Both a lot of wide receivers: Travis Benjamin, Marquise Goodwin, Allen Hurns, Albert Wilson,
Nate Solder.
Yeah, that's big.
Oh, C.J. Mosley. C.J. Mosley, I think.
Okay, there you go.
I think that was the one. I had to look at the list to be sure.
Patrick Chung.
Patrick Chung was another one.
Okay, that's a big one.
I think those three are...
Okay. C.J. Mosley, Nate Solder, Patrick Chung.
The one thing I'm looking up and down this list...
Damian Williams?
Ooh, given what he did at the end.
Yeah, with the Super Bowl.
Yeah, okay.
Pretty big name. Okay. So there were some good names.
There were some good names.
There were some big names.
No quarterbacks.
No.
We were talking about this pre-show.
They make a lot of money. You want to opt out and take $350,000 or $150,000?
But you're basically your contract tolls to next year, so you could just take a year off, rest your body, come back next year.
Yeah, but if your contract's not guaranteed, you could get caught.
Well, you'd have to make sure your contract was guaranteed.
Yeah.
If you were in a position where your contract was guaranteed, plus, as we were talking pre-show.
Contracts aren't guaranteed, most of them.
No, but some of them early on, right, have like the guarantees kind of kicked in early in contractual, the contract that you have. Plus, the pressure on quarterbacks. Can you imagine if a starting quarterback punted on the season? The kind of grief and blowback that guy would get from that team's fan base. I mean, I understand we're living in a COVID world, and there is a lot of understandable sympathy for these guys who do choose to opt out with very few people begrudging them. But if it's a star quarterback who decides to, you know what, I'm just going to take this year off. My contract will toll the next year. My guaranteed money, I'll get it next year. Everything next year, I'll take this year off. That guy would have heard about it from that fan base big time. Quarterbacks, I think, were under a little more pressure to not opt out than, say, the Damian Williams or the C.J. Mosleys or the Patrick Chungs.
I just wonder
world.
If the Patriots had an extra incentive to get guys topped out. I mean, are they trying for the number one pick next year?
The Patriots?
The Patriots.
Well, have you seen
half the damn team.
Have you seen how much cap space they have now?
They opened up a lot of cap space.
They've got the third most cap space in the NFL now.
But what does that do? What does that do? Everybody signed.
Well, it doesn't do anything for this year. But next year, what it does do is it allows them to roll that cap space over to next year. And next year, they weren't up against the cap.
But all these guys come back under contract.
They could, but they won't be in as much trouble next year because next year they were going to have the Brady monies off the books, all that dead cap money that was weighing them down this year. That's all gone next year. So they can absorb all those guys coming back next year and still have cap space next season.
And didn't they reach an agreement with, like, the what would you call it, the board for Aaron Hernandez on his deal? And I think they did.
I didn't see that.
I think that there was still a cap issue with Aaron Hernandez that was resolved.
Really? Okay.
Yeah.
I did not see that.
All right.
Well, you look that up because we're going to take a break. But when we come back, Major League Baseball seemingly had found the formula and was working towards all 30 Major League Baseball teams playing this weekend. That ain't going to happen. And we'll tell you why next on the Burns and Gambo Show. The hope was that this weekend all 30 Major League Baseball teams were going to play. That is not
wishful thinking, my friend. Wishful thinking.
The entire series now has been canceled between the St. Louis Cardinals and the Chicago Cubs.
This is it. Man, this is bad.
Yeah.
So the Cardinals, when was the last time the Cardinals played a baseball game?
Last time the Cardinals played a baseball game was July 29th.
July 29th
was the last time they played a baseball game. They had gone three straight days with no positives. They were gearing up to open up a series against the Chicago Cubs today. One additional player tested positive. That postponed Friday's game against the Cubs. As of this morning, the decisions about the rest of the season were still pending, but Major League Baseball just announced moments ago, that the entire series this weekend has been postponed. That means that the St. Louis Cardinals so far have played only 5 games on the season.
We know Yadier Molina, Paul DeJong, we know those players were part of the 6 that tested positive. And it looked like they were going to play, and now the St. Louis Cardinals aren't going to play.
Yeah.
You sent something to me that just had me baffled a little bit. Like, it said that they, you know, in order to play all 60 games, they would have to play 55 games in 50 days. Is that what it was?
Bob Nightingale tweeted this out this morning. The St. Louis Cardinals, even if they are permitted to resume play on Saturday, which we now know they're not, they must play 55 games in 51 days. If the entire series is postponed, which it now has, in order for them to get to 60, they would have to play 55 games in 49 days. Now, I think the confusion was maybe you thought that that meant the Cardinals were going to try to play 55 games.
Yeah, which is
games.
Impossible. There's just no way they're going to play 60 games.
I read that tweet, and I assume what it means is that it is impossible, and that because you'd have to fit in 55 games in 49 days, that the Cardinals aren't going to reach 60 games this year.
Here's the worry for me. Okay, let's read between the lines. The latest positive test came after not one, not two, 3 straight days of all clean results.
Yep.
That's what the fear is. Okay, let's dive into this a little bit. The fear is that you could be negative, and this just proves it. There was a guy that was negative 3 straight days. Took it negative. Next day, positive. You got COVID. Oh my God, I just tested negative 3 days in a row. That's how, because it takes, this is why they're scared to death,
right,
in sports. Because I got this player is the perfect example. Mm-hmm. You testing the next day doesn't mean a damn thing.
Right.
It's testing the day after doesn't mean a damn thing. They tested 3 straight days and this guy was negative. Then they tested again and he was positive.
Could take days.
Could take
days. Manifest itself.
Yep. Could take
you.
A week.
You just don't know.
You don't know. Yep.
And yet, Buster only today said, I think, the obvious. And I think at this point it is fairly obvious. Major League Baseball is going to try to keep pushing through.
I think big picture, they're not that tenuous. You know, I've talked to general managers this week who really believe that the perspective of Major League Baseball is we're putting our heads down and we're going to make this work. I mean, you guys saw that list of makeup games that we have with the Marlins, you know, 7 games in 5 days. They're going to do everything they can to play.
They're going to do everything they can to play. It's a question of whether they're going to get into it. Now, you talk about solutions. How, let's say for a second, they do try to play 55 games in 49 days. How do you do it? Well, this tweet came out a moment ago. Tonight's Phillies-Atlanta Braves game has been postponed. I think it's because of weather, not because of COVID. I think it's because of weather.
Okay.
Which means they'll now play a doubleheader on Sunday. That means that 23% of the Phillies season will be decided by 7-inning games.
How many?
23%. 14 of 60 are going to end up being 7-inning doubleheader games for the Philadelphia Phillies.
They're going to wear out these. You cannot have 14 innings, play 14 innings a day. You're going to wear out your arms. I know you got expanded roster. That's why they keep it at a 28 and now go to 26. But you're going to play all of those doubleheaders? You're going to play 14 innings every day?
Yeah. Yeah, and
but God forbid your starting gets blown out in the second inning, and you've got to go 12 innings with only one of your guys being a starter.
And I think what we're talking about here is the extreme. And I think eventually Major League Baseball is just going to have to come to grips with the fact that not everybody is going to play all 60. Now, what they want to try to avoid, is, you know, one team, I would think they'd want to try to get everybody at like 55, 50, so there's not like a drastic difference, right? You don't want a 10-game difference. You don't want everybody who's played 60 games and one team has played 39, right? Or I'm sorry, 49.
If you could get
everybody into the 50s, if you could get everybody into the mid 50s, then it's close enough that everybody's relatively even. The fear is that there's one team, one outlier, and they've played like 47 or 48 games, and you look at their win percentage, and if you're a team beneath them in the standings, you look at it and go, well, that's not fair. You know, what would they have done in those other 12 games? Where would they have ended up in the final standing? So my guess is baseball will do everything they can, and this is just my guess, to keep everybody close to 60. 60 is kind of a moving target, but can you get everyone to play 55, 56, somewhere in that neighborhood? So at least there's some.
But don't they have to play each other in these doubleheaders? You can't have a team playing more than 60.
True. But that you're going to have...
Okay, we're going to give you all these doubleheaders against the Diamondbacks. Well, they're already on pace to play 60.
Right, so who
do you play?
You have to play the other teams that have already
are in the same
games,
boat.
That are on the same boat.
Yeah, well, you
the
go...
Marlins,
you,
the
hey,
Phillies,
you know what? We need to make up games. You guys are going to Arizona for three. Play doubleheaders against the Diamondbacks. Well, no, you can't.
Yeah.
They're on... Because there's a lot of teams that are still on pace for 60.
On an amusing note, yeah. I mean, the rest of baseball is still moving forward this weekend. They did release their latest test results. And so far, they're actually pretty good for the most part in terms of the positive tests. They've done okay this past week with the positive tests they've had come back from the COVID. I did get a laugh out of this story. You're a Yankees fan. You probably know about the fans for the Phillies who were across the street from the stadium.
Yeah, with the blowhorn.
They were blowing the air horn during the game.
And Boone got upset.
And Boone actually went out to talk to the umpire, and the umpire was like,
what can I do?
What do you want me to do about it? They're not in the stadium. They're across the street.
Yeah.
There's like this group of Phillies fans. They call themselves the Fandemic Crew.
Yeah.
They were blowing an air horn when Yankee starter Jordan Montgomery was making his pitches, and Boone's like, do something. And the ump's like, I can't do anything about them. They're across the street. They were banging drums a couple of days ago. I pretty clever, if you ask me. Pretty
now,
clever.
I didn't see it. I read it. But did they have like a direct sight line into the field?
I think they like through a gate.
Through a
they
gate?
Could see some of it. Or maybe they were just watching the game on
That's
TV.
That's fine. Listen, good for them.
Watching the game on their phone and just, okay. Blow it. He's pitching.
It's a little delay, though. You know, that's what I'm saying.
True.
Wonder if they had a direct sight line into the field.
I'm not sure. I'm not sure. Just like the rest of the series, it was a back-and-forth game today for the Coyotes. But after clinching their qualifying round against the Predators, the Yotes are headed to the Stanley Cup playoffs for the first time in 8 years. We'll talk about that coming up on the Burns and Gambo Show.